This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue. There's some breaking news out of the Raiders. It looks like Derek Carr is gone. Not that surprising, but nevertheless, he really, really interesting the last 2 weeks of the season. It kind of happened really during Christmas break, remember? The Raiders announced that he was, so they were benching him for Jarrett Stidham, but then they did this thing where Carr just kind of went into the office and said, why don't I just leave? And they went, yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't you just stay away? Because I don't want to be a distraction. You got another backup, and I'll just not show up anymore. And they went, okay, that works. I mean, yeah, it's benching's always hard for a starter, but
you mean they didn't go, no, please stay. We really like you.
Yeah, no, we think you're the future.
Is he gone? Okay, he's gone.
Is he gone? Oh, wow, how the mighty have fallen that quickly.
That would have been awkward.
This league really doesn't pause for anybody.
No,
not at all.
I mean, how many times have we said this? That, you know, in baseball, even in basketball, when you announce your retirement, you're going to get the tour.
You are.
You know, you're going to go to fun places and you're going to get gifts, you know, weird ones. Like, I remember, didn't like the Angels give, Derek Jeter some boots?
Yeah. They gave him boots, a surfboard. We got a surfboard.
Yeah. I mean, it was just weird stuff. In football, nah.
No. They just say, that's it. See you later.
We're done with you.
I really honestly wonder, 3 interceptions on that Christmas Eve night against the Steelers, if that sealed it. They had won four or five going into that game. They were in the playoff hunt. They pull off that win. They're right in the thick of it. That game, and then it became, nah, we're done.
Can I say something, all right?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to defend your Steelers for a second.
Okay.
I'm sure you won't mind. Because towards the end of the season, it kind of felt like the Steelers were the blame for a lot of teams' mishaps.
Yeah, I would go.
The Raiders are sitting there like, you know, Derek Carr, we're playing the Steelers. They have nothing. You should win this game.
And then, they did that at the end of the season, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, I can't remember who the Steelers played next.
They played Baltimore.
It was like Baltimore. The Steelers have nothing. You should win. Cleveland, they have nothing. You should win this game. And it's just, Steelers are like, you know what? We're not a terrible team, you guys.
No, you're right. But if the Raiders had won, you'd be looking at a Derek Carr going into the final 2 games of the season, San Francisco against and Kansas City. Now, I don't care how good you're playing. That's a big hill to climb to face off against both of those teams. But he would have had 5 out of 6 victories at the end. The body of work wasn't good. They got off to not only a slow start, but it was a bad start. They went 0-3, and then they were 1-4, but they were in these tight games. But you can't lose these games. I mean, like, eventually you're going to have to turn in some wins. Then they lost 3 in a row, and then all of a sudden it was like, well, now you're fighting for your life. Yesterday I was talking about Jim Harbaugh, for example. I was talking about Jim Harbaugh, but I was basically a larger point about the division. So if you're Sean Payton, but mostly Jim Harbaugh, if you are a guy that has options, you can either stay where you're at, in Sean Payton's case, retired, playing golf, doing some TV work. In Harbaugh's case, just stay at Michigan. And you are a coach that doesn't have to take the first thing that comes because he's 35 and my God, this is awesome. You look at the division. A year ago, you would have been, man, why would you want to get in a division with Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr, right? Now you have to take Derek Carr out of the equation. Now it's Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the Raiders were an up-and-coming team. Rick Bisaccia had that team in the playoffs after the John Gruden scandal, but then Josh McDaniel was supposed to take the next step. And now I'm curious about the way people see McDaniel. Because everybody that we talked to, Hondo Carpenter was a guy we've had on to talk Raiders, and he said over and over again, he said it in the preview when McDaniels first got there, was starting to run training camp, and also when we had him on kind of mid-season. Players love Josh McDaniel. They loved playing for Josh McDaniel. When they were struggling, players went to Mark Davis and said, we love this guy. But the reality of it is, can he coach at the NFL level? Is he a quality coach? because he had the Broncos 8-0 when he first got to Denver, and it was a absolute titanic wreck after that. They failed to make the playoffs at 8-0. They went 8-8. Then the second year was a complete mess, an absolute mess, and he got fired. And now he goes to the Raiders, and he takes a team that went to the playoffs and gave Cincinnati all it could handle in a 7-point loss and took that momentum, landed Chandler Jones, Devontae Adams, and they didn't make the playoffs with a 6-11 record. You can look at Derek Carr, and everybody's going to, bye-bye, going next direction. But as much as you may like a guy, much as you may really love walking into an office and seeing him, I don't think it's wrong to ask yourself, can he do that job that everybody like? Why do they like him? Do you think if I went to all the players on that team, practice squad, the 53 roster, everybody, and asked them who's responsible for the 6-11 season, I'd get 53 plus answers of us? I wouldn't find 10 people anonymously saying it might be the coach. I mean, Josh McDaniels is a smart guy, right? He's a smart football guy, brilliant offensive coordinator, you know, keeping jobs in the league, Belichick and the Patriots and all of that, and what he did with Mac Jones. Well, you can point to Tom Brady and fine. I understand sort of the roll your eyes at that. But he comes from a football coaching dad, a football family. So I'm not saying that he's like a nuclear scientist coming in and trying to be a coach, or a television play-by-play guy and trying to be a coach. He's a coach on a certain level. Can he be a head coach? And it's you know, to think where Derek Carr was with an extension. He just got an extension. He's going to live in Las Vegas. He's going to be around a while. I mean, he was the face of the franchise in terms of real turmoil. Right? When John Gruden was going through his scandal and John Gruden was out, Derek Carr was the guy on the podium speaking about that and trying to keep the team focused on the task at hand as a new coach, new coach was going to have to take over and get them through the end of the season. Was it Henry Ruggs and his horrific car accident that he caused where he killed the woman in that fiery crash? Going to spend a long time in jail. Derek Carr was the guy that had to speak on that as the team. I mean, this team has got some talent. Josh Jacobs, forget Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones. We already know about them. You know, there's some good talent. Darren Waller, there's some good players. Max Crosby. But the reality of it is Derek Carr, they're going to go in another direction. And I wonder how much of this was Josh McDaniels never really believing in Derek Carr in the first place.
Could be.
Because I remember.
Now, does he land somewhere?
I think so, sure.
I mean,
young enough, experienced enough. There's always room.
I'm
kind of
looking. I mean,
like
obviously, I don't think he's worth it. You know, I think you've got to find another draft pick. But you know, the Texans with the number 2 pick, you know, maybe they're able to work. I mean, I don't think Derek Carr is worth the number 2 pick, but you can probably find something in there. Like, you know, go maybe a couple picks for Derek Carr, right?
So I'm going to have to dive a little bit more into his money situation, because I'm assuming that it is a release before the Super Bowl thing, that there's a cap hit the Raiders will get that is much less than if they kept him on at another particular time. He is 31 years old. That I do know. So what does he sign for? Where does he go? If you've got an arm and some experience in this league, there's always room for you. If Nathan Peterman can still have a job, yeah. Derek Carr can.
Well,
that's
because
job.
People love Nathan Peterman, though.
That's right. They do love Nathan, including his former coach, right? Including John Gruden.
Gruden would have made him a starter.
He loved him. So there's always going to be room there. Look like, huh?
He's with the Bears.
Yeah, he's with the Bears. They started him when they benched Fields to wrap up the season. When they knew what they had to do, right?
I was just thinking, you know, what I was looking out for Houston is that if you're able to get Derek Carr, a lot of people can dust off their Carr jerseys.
That's right. That's right. How long was David there? Like a good number of years, right? Good chunk of time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just throw that out there. But
Houston might get PTSD.
The economics, I'm telling you right now, man, the economics of the NFL, we just spoke to Carl Eller in the last hour. It is amazing that the owners can have that much leverage over these guys like this.
Really
and other sports just The other players' unions do not come anywhere close to a system like this. I mean, this system is amazingly beneficial to owners. All right, you can don't. And again, cry me a river. I know Derek Carr got a lot of money guaranteed and all that good stuff like that. But that he signed a 3-year, $121 million extension in the spring. All right, in 2022, he signed an extension. The deal, though, allows the Raiders, before the Super Bowl, they can cut him and have an only $5.6 million cap hit. That's how you work the numbers. That's how you manipulate the numbers. And you can, I mean, it's really remarkable. It's, I mean, great for the owners. And I know the guaranteed money makes it a better pill to swallow a little bit. But no wonder these guys look at NBA contracts and Major League Baseball contracts and just go, ugh, I chose the wrong sport. You know, the 10th man in the NBA is making $18 million a year on a fully guaranteed $70 million deal and plays 6 minutes a night. And a star defensive end could be cut tomorrow if the team was like, well, we kind of need some cap space. Thanks for your time. So, appreciate you. I mean, that's crazy. But it really goes to show you can fall off the cliff so quick in the NBA.
Yep.
There is no, oh, I just had an off year. That's good. The Raiders came in with a new coach, a new identity of what they wanted to do. And Derek Carr was not fitting into that plan. And it made it even more easy when you go 6-11 and you realize, I mean, they got Devontae Adams. They were college teammates 1 year together, and Derek Carr is gone. Nuts. Nuts. We'll talk more NFL as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1975. Steelers beat the Vikings in Super Bowl IX, Tulane Stadium in New Orleans. But it's also the anniversary of Super Bowl III. Now, we went with 1975 because Carl Eller was joining us today, so we sort of put two and two together. But then I'm a Steelers fan, and then we threw it that way. But if we were doing it, I think we would have gone Super Bowl III today if we didn't have Carl Eller on, because that's a bigger Super Bowl. That was the bigger game. That was the bigger upset. So
well, it's a more more known history. One too. Yeah.
Yeah, like when you talk about greatest upsets in sports history, it's on the list.
Well, I mean, you say Super Bowl III, what's the first image that comes to your mind?
Joe Namath sitting in the lounge chair.
Okay,
with
for
the reporters
me,
around him.
For me, it's waving the number one as he's running off the field.
Waving the number one, yeah. So, no, Super Bowl III would definitely be, you know, the one we would have chosen today.
Yeah.
So, again, looking forward to this weekend.
I mean, 1969 music, not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. So.
Not too shabby.
But news about Derek Carr, he thanks Raider fans, says goodbye. He is likely going on to other things. The Broncos interviewed a former Stanford coach, but not the one you're thinking of yet, David Shaw. Interviewed for the Broncos.
I see
position.
What you did there.
I know, right? Tried to tease you. Tried to tease you. I'm really curious to where the Broncos go with this. I'm really curious because – look, there's going to be job openings. They are all the time, right? But they're going to be the, you know, teams, blah, blah. This is the Broncos ownership's first hire as a coach, for a coach. They bought the team after Nathaniel Hackett was already on board. So this is their first attempt, and there's a lot of people that are involved in the ownership group. It's obviously a Walton money, but, you know, Condoleezza Rice, for example, is a part owner of the Denver Broncos. Now, there's a number of other people. So I'm interested to see what they want and who they'll go after and what they'll pay to get
and
who they want.
They need to hit a home run, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. They need to hit a home run. Look, so you've got a Bronco team that Gary Kubiak led to a Super Bowl, right? And then after that, it was Vance Joseph, Vic Fangio, Nathaniel Hackett. Am I missing one? I don't think I'm missing one. I think those are the three.
And then
that took over after that Super Bowl.
And then the quarterbacks.
So the quarterbacks are – that's a much longer list, right? I mean, that's just
– they've had their quarterback now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've locked him in. So now you got to find the right head coach. What if that doesn't work out next
you
year?
You need a coach. You need a coach that is not going to say this just to get the job, but a coach that honestly says, look, I will tell you right now, what Russell Wilson needs is this, this, and this. And I think we can unlock some higher level of play than you saw this season. There is people. There are people in Denver that saw the way he played against the Chiefs and the Chargers and said, wow, he played a lot better when Jerry Rosberg was there rather than Nathaniel Hackett. So you need to kind of, if you're kind of evaluating this on an executive level, you need to find out, well, what was working? What did they do? How did that happen? Maybe it's just late end of the season sort of thing where, nah, all right, you know, we just throw it out there and see what happens. Maybe that was it. But you need a coach to come in and say, I can unlock this because you've invested a lot of money in this guy. He's a 9-time Pro Bowler. And while many people, including myself, I didn't think Russell Wilson was going to go to Denver and be a rock star, but I certainly did not think he was going to have an offense where they were scoring 14 points a game. I thought the answer was somewhere in the middle. You'd get good Russ, you'd get bad Russ, and maybe some games you'd get great Russ. But for almost the entire season, you got pretty bad Russ. Really awful Russ when he was out there playing. I know he spent a couple games hurt, but that you need a coach to say, I see what he can do and where he can grow. Surprisingly to me, that I think the Broncos are, I think this ownership group is going to, you're right about a home run, but this, they have to be careful here because you can get a big name that doesn't work and you can get a, now, I don't want to say no name, that's almost being harsh, but a guy nobody knows and hit a home run. Where you have to hit a home run is you, I think this team needs to be guided with somebody who has experience. I think you need it. You have to have somebody now take over this team that knows how to be a head coach in the National Football League. Vance Joseph, Vic Fangio, and Nathaniel Hackett, all of them first-year head coaches. Fangio, when he got hired, remember, that was he had spent 30-plus years in the NFL. Highly respected defensive coordinator. A guy that should have been a head coach long before the Broncos made him a head coach based on just the way things should have fallen for him. So in his case, it might have been, yeah, okay, all right. But the other two guys, you took a chance. And there's nothing wrong with taking a chance. Vance Joseph is still in this league, right? Still is an assistant coach in this league. Nathaniel Hackett, Matt LaFleur was talking about bringing him back to Green Bay. Now, he's not going to be the offensive coordinator. Stenovich is the offensive coordinator there. He's going to stay. But in some capacity, Nathaniel Hackett is welcome back to the Green Bay family. That's how it works. You get a shot, you fail, you just stay. You're back in the league doing what you do best. Fangio's hire was well-respected around the league. People felt like, yeah, that's a good hire. That's a guy who should get a job. Took a chance on Vance Joseph, didn't work. But let's go back to Nathaniel Hackett for a second. Let's process that, because I'm going to remind you that there was one point in Denver history where they hired Josh McDaniels. Now, when they hired Josh McDaniels, as I said earlier in the last segment, he started off 8-0. They went 8-8, didn't make the playoffs. And then the next year was a complete mess, and he got fired. And one of the reasons he got fired was there was a little bit of a taping scandal that went on in London at the time. And I remember Pat Bowlen was just so incensed, and it was an embarrassing situation for the team. And he felt like the team was kind of right now a laughingstock in the NFL. They took a chance on McDaniels. Not only were they not winning, but now they had this scandal, and it was embarrassing to Bronco Nation, and they made that move. And what they also did, Pat Bowlen, is he brought John Elway in to become executive president of football operations, whatever title he was given, but John Elway was starting to run the show. But at the time that Josh McDaniels got hired, he was the hottest guy you would want to hire. And so I never fault organizations with a Monday morning quarterback lens, right? I don't do that. If you make a hire that everyone thinks you should make and it doesn't work out, it just doesn't work out. I don't blame you for not having the hindsight nobody else was willing to put on the table and do something about. It's easy to say, oh, Nathaniel Hackett, what a dumb hire. Yeah, it's dumb today because he didn't last a full season. But you know what? Go back to when he was hired. It wasn't exactly stupid. He was a bright young man. He was guiding the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. And there was a connection to the idea that maybe Aaron Rodgers would want to go to Denver. So you take a chance. And you take a chance to see if that happened. Once the Broncos had to hire Jerry Rosberg to help Nathaniel Hackett do things coaches are supposed to do, that's when the warning bells started coming off to people. Like, wow, I think this guy's way over his head. The smartest thing you can do in life is when you realize you are in over your head is to get out of that situation, ask for help, and eject and learn from it, and then go back, maybe go back into it better prepared. Right? And I've seen it a lot. In our business, a lot of times we've seen young program directors get jobs in music, for example. It's not uncommon for me to see a kid 25 years old running a big music station or whatnot. And sometimes they're brilliant. And sometimes, yeah, it's overwhelming. They're not used to the meetings and executive meetings and talking to corporate and talking to talent and managing all of the things that happen, salespeople coming to them and promotions people. They get a little overwhelmed. But then they're 30 and they go at it again and they're much better. You can find that in almost every field, right? Almost every field in America. In Nathaniel Hackett's case, maybe he never becomes a head coach again. Maybe down the road, he's like, you know what? I'm older and wiser and I think I can do this again. If you're the Broncos, don't even mess with that. Don't even mess with that possibility. Bring in somebody that knows exactly how to do this. They may not work out, but at least you've handled a big part of the equation as to who should be guiding this football team. Because the second you go, you know what? Barry Smith is a up-and-coming coordinator, and we love to give him an opportunity. And then by week three, you're on the phone to people going, would you like to help him call timeouts at the appropriate spot? Would you like to help him manage the clock late in games? If you're making those phone calls, that's on you. That ownership group that had to hire Jerry Rosberg, that's not on them. They didn't hire Nathaniel Hackett. But if you hire a young guy because you liked him because he was rah, 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 we're going to get to work and here's my plan and this is what we're going to, and you're like, wow, I want to run through a wall for this guy. You're hired. And then he shows up at the press conference going, I'm going to drink orange and blue. You're never going to see me out of this office. I don't even know I have a family. And then next thing you know, you're hiring a guy because he doesn't know how to get a first down in 13 seconds. That's on you. That's your fault. Bring in somebody who's smart enough to have had all of those things in the past lined up correctly. All right, we're going to talk about the Ravens coming up later in the show. Let's talk more about the playoffs this weekend and some of the teams that have got some issues. We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio with my main man, Tony D.
Thank you, Brent. We continue with Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Brent Musburger is like a legendary sportscaster in my life.
Yes.
I mean, he was on NFL Today with Irv Cross, Phyllis George, and Jimmy the Greek. But what I remember him the most, and I think one of the reasons I wanted to get in this business, was I was so enamored in the 80s with the Celtics and the Lakers in the NBA Finals. And Musburger always did the pregame stuff. And Dick Stockton and Tommy Heinsohn were the guys on the call. But Musburger was always the scene setter. And I'll never forget, he had like a shot of Boston, right? He was different shots of Boston. And then it cuts to him and he goes, but if you've got two of these, and he showed up two tickets to the games. And I just remember going, oh, this is sit me down. Oh, can't wait. So, all right, as we continue with Wake Up Call. So, okay, look, is this a story or not? Let's talk about this. Lamar Jackson, is this a story? I'm going to give you the details and I'm going to let you guys figure this out. You can hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Lamar Jackson has missed 5 games. He has missed 16 practices. He has a PCL sprain in his knee. When he was given the diagnosis, there was an assessment of the injury and a timeline for recovery that would put him returning to the team in mid-December, just in time for the final couple of games of the season and a playoff push. Now, when you do that as a medical professional, there's so many things that can happen. You can set a setback to the injury, bodies heal in different ways. Sometimes 4 to 6 weeks needs 6 to 10 weeks. It's just the way it is. You're giving your best guess. It's all it is. It's a guess. But that's not the way people perceive it sometimes. When people hear 4 to 6 weeks, they're like, well, yeah, you have until week 7. And if after that, and that's what's going on here. Well, when you come out with a deadline, not a deadline, I should say, but a timeline that puts Lamar Jackson coming back in mid-December, and he's still not back, he's still not going to practice. And oh, by the way, the two sides didn't come to a long-term agreement this summer, right? They couldn't work it out. So Lamar Jackson is betting on himself this year. Now, the Ravens could franchise him, but then you've got a franchise situation with an unhappy quarterback, blah, blah, blah. They could trade him and get tremendous value for him. They're not letting him walk. They're going to do what the Packers did. Remember the Packers with Devontae Adams? They basically franchised him to trade him, right? You always want to get value. Never let a player walk. You never let a player walk. This is what happened with in baseball. Baseball, this happens all the time in baseball, right? Where you know a guy's in free agency, so you trade him. Mookie Betts is a perfect example of this. Mookie Betts wanted to be a free agent, really wanted to be a free agent. But the Red Sox were like, well, we don't want to compete right now with the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets and everybody else, so we're going to trade you. And that happened in 2020. They just recently signed Rafael Devers. And the reason they signed Rafael Devers is because they were losing three players in free agency. They basically lost three players, Mookie Betts and two to free agency. So you don't let a player go, you walk when you can get something for him. But if I'm the Ravens, why would I want to? Lamar Jackson, they created a total team around Lamar Jackson. The way they play football is based around the way Lamar Jackson plays football, right? That's it. There's no system. Remember a couple of years ago, and I think it was against your Chargers too. Remember that game where the Ravens were struggling? The Chargers were leading playoff game? And people were like, well, you got to bench Lamar Jackson for Joe Flacco. Because Flacco was still on the roster at the time.
Yeah.
Remember that game? And people were saying.
Yeah. I think it was against the Chargers.
Remember that? They said, oh, no. Afterwards, they said, well, why didn't you bench Lamar Jackson? He was struggling. Baltimore eventually got back into that game, but it was a little bit too late. People were saying, no, it's not as easy as you think. The entire offensive system is based on Lamar Jackson. Flacco just couldn't come in and just do those things with the personnel and scheme. Where that was based on what Lamar Jackson could do, running the ball, throwing the ball, moving on the run, all of those things that Flacco couldn't do. So the entire offense is built around Lamar Jackson. Doesn't mean you can't change it, but if you're Baltimore, you got to figure this, you know, you got to figure out how to keep Lamar Jackson around. But it does lead to a question. This is why I'm bringing this up. Is this a real legitimate story? Do you think Lamar Jackson, realizing that he's betting on himself, is not 100% and doesn't want to go out there not 100% given what could be at stake financially for him? That's a hard thing. That is a hard thing to accuse a player of. Right? That's a very difficult accusation. To sort of imply that Lamar Jackson doesn't want to be on the field because he knows his knee is not quite ready. It could be ready, but he'd rather not risk it because the payday's on the other end. Now, on the one hand, it's completely plausible, as I was mentioning earlier. On the one hand, you're talking about generational wealth. You're talking about setting up your kids, grandkids, your family for a very, very long time. But on the flip side of it, you want to be a competitor. You want to be out there. You want to be with your team. You want to complete the journey together. You want to be out there. All of you from the very beginning of the season had a goal of getting to the playoffs, and then let's roll the dice with the cards that were dealt to us and let's see what happens. Lamar Jackson, is this worthy of an in-depth look by the Ravens? And I bring this up because of John Harbaugh. Now, John Harbaugh was asked about this, and he did not seem to do normal coach speak. He seemed to be talking about being kind of in the dark as well as anybody else about what's going on. Why didn't Harbaugh come out and say, well, we did our own analysis, and you know what? He's not ready to play. And you know what? We can't have a quarterback out there that's 50%. And he's really, really struggling with things we're going to need him to do. And we feel like that's going to hurt us more than it's going to help us having him out there. No, he didn't. It was very kind of up in the air. So again, Quadri Ishmael is going to join us. He's with the Ravens, played for him, was a Super Bowl champion. We're going to talk to him about this because, you know, help us understand where he thinks Lamar Jackson is. It's very easy, by the way, to go, oh, no, he's a competitor. They're all competitors, but they're also businessmen. All right? No one's doing this for free. You know, and be honest. Let's all be honest for a second. No matter what field you're in, if there were certain things that you had to do that you weren't comfortable with, but on the flip side of that, your grandkids could go to Harvard without needing a loan, how would you treat that? Right? Like, how would you do that in your field, whatever field that may be? How would you look at that opportunity? Work on this project, possibly sacrifice generational wealth, but the project could be something really exciting, or it could be nothing. Or make bold decisions that may not make the group that's working on the project happy, but on the back end, again, grandkids living comfortably, great grandkids living comfortably. How do you do that? How do you process that? For some of us, it's probably a thought we can't think about. I'd like to believe Lamar Jackson is legitimately hurt. I'd like to think Lamar Jackson is absolutely can't practice with the team.
Yeah, I bet he is.
You know what I mean? That's kind of where I like to think about this.
But I think it's, you know, also I really do think it's just a fear of furthering injury.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. That's, yeah. Like if he furthers his injury, yeah. Here's the thing. We just talked about this with Tua. Tua is another one along those lines. When we spoke to Alan Papar about this, think about this. If you're the Dolphins, you bring in Tua Tagovailoa and they're playing great football, right? They're one of the, you look at the team, like that's a very dangerous team. Look at the weapons that they have and all of this. Tua's about ready to land a long-term deal, guaranteed money. And what are the numbers in guaranteed quarterback contracts money? They're nine figures, right? We always see the numbers and then they go, and 110 of this is guaranteed, 120 of this is guaranteed, right? Tua's ready to land that. Would you walk away from that at 24 years old because of concussions?
Yeah.
Would you? Or would you say, I'm tough enough to get through this, and I got to get the money on the other side?
Yeah, even though it sounds stupid, you push it.
You push it. And then if you're the Dolphins, do you go, well, he's so fragile, we can't have a legitimate conversation about our future because we may not want him as our future now. That's the reality of this situation in Miami. But in this situation, the two sides wanted to come to a deal. They just couldn't. They couldn't do it. They decided to go into this season. Fine, I'll play. I'll play on my rookie deal. Fine. At the end of it, franchise me if you want, but I'll be looking for the payday. He was about ready to get the payday. Then he got hurt. Now he's not coming back on the timeline that people thought. But always remember, the timeline is very. It's not set in stone. Come on, it's not a video game where if you pause it, your character gets full rest. It's not how it works. So maybe Lamar Jackson was legitimately hurt. All right, we're going to talk Ravens football with Quadri Ishmael coming up next and what they've got to do to beat the Cincinnati Bengals and the situation with Lamar Jackson. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call continues on Sportsman Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
That Sweet Emotion is 1975 on a Throwback Thursday? That's wild. Yeah, Throwback Thursday on this date, Super Bowl IX, Steelers and Minnesota Vikings. With the Baltimore Ravens heading to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. It's our guest line sponsored by Progressive Insurance. We're making things even easier. We'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Quadri Ishmael joins us, Baltimore Raven, former Super Bowl champion, TV pregame host and NFL analyst to talk Ravens football. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. Looking forward to this weekend's game.
All right, let's get to before we get to Lamar Jackson stuff. Let's get to the temperature right now of everything other than quarterback for the Ravens. Do you like the way the team is at least looking from different aspects of defense, O-line, things like that, as they get ready to play the Bengals?
Okay, so yes, from the overall aspect, are they a playoff-worthy team? Yes, they are. Defense, Roquan Smith, he signs his extension, blockbuster deal, making him the highest-paid linebacker in football. I love the fact that they are ready to go in the secondary. It looks as though D-line-wise, Calais Campbell is back healthy after missing some games with a sore knee. I think they're primed and ready to go there. I think special teams, Jordan Stout is probably so far under the radar from a punting aspect of things because he's done a phenomenal job of pinning teams back. So you also got the GOAT in Justin Tucker, who when you need him to make a clutch kick from 50 yards or out, he is the guy. And his consistency is what gives you, you know, that chance to feel confident in being aggressive from an offensive standpoint. All that being said, the elephant in the room in playoff football is, yes, do you have a running game? Sure, you got a running game. The Ravens, do they have a running game? J.K. Dobbins, he's back healthy. Gus Edwards, although he was in concussion protocol, after the, I think it was like two or three plays in against the Bengals, I believe he's going to be back healthy. The O-line, I think they're grooving and ready to go as well. So we're checking off all the boxes, and then that leaves you with the final box, which is quarterback.
Yeah, and where are we standing right now in terms of Tyler Huntley, Anthony Brown, Lamar Jackson, 16 missed practices. Give us an idea of where we're at right now, the quarterback situation in Baltimore.
Well, we know this, that Tyler Huntley has something going on with his shoulder, his throwing shoulder, no doubt, and that caused Anthony Brown to be called into action for the last game of the year. We saw what it was like to have your first start in a scenario where, you know, this ain't game one and teams are trying to feel out who they are. This is the last game of the season and you're going up against a playoff caliber team, so... You know, he had his moments. They turned the ball over in that game four times, and you know, three of those directly were on his shoulders. That being said, when it comes to both of those guys, Tyler or Anthony Brown, I'm just hoping that, you know, they can really just be game managers, don't do anything that's going to hurt the team and put this team in position to win. So why do you say them as opposed to Lamar? If Lamar plays, we don't really know what he's going to be like. Is he an upgrade over both of those guys? Absolutely. At the same time, he missed Wednesday's practice as far as the media viewing portion of it. So we don't know if he's going to be ready to go. And all the different reports that have been coming out of, you know, the Baltimore media, it's whether or not, you know, Lamar has, you know, the full range and capabilities of his PCL sprain. So that's something that we are also looking at when he comes back. What is he really going to be looking like?
This thing could have been avoided. Obviously, contracts are contracts and discussions are discussions. But wasn't there a sort of on the radar this kind of situation could have happened for Lamar Jackson if a deal wasn't done?
So from an injury standpoint and
just getting to a point where you're betting on yourself, you guys can't get to a position of deciding on anything, but what if we're at the end of the season and you're hurt? What, like, it sounds like it would be a little sense of urgency on both parts to enter this season with a done deal.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, that's always going to be in the back of everyone's mind on both sides of this negotiation.
Right.
Yeah, sure. From a player perspective, Lamar is doing his own contract. You know, we know that, yeah, betting on yourself has proven to be worthy when it comes to getting paid. And we saw that with Joe Flacco betting on himself. Ironically enough, the following year he gets hurt after having a phenomenal postseason and taking the team to the Super Bowl. And so that kind of derailed his production and his career. He never really was the same. I think for Lamar, you know, he's put up a resume that's showing that, hey, when I'm in there, we're scoring well over, we're averaging over three touchdowns a game, and we're looking good. When I'm not in there, you're just an average offense, and you're barely putting up, you know, two touchdowns a game, and that's a significant difference. And so I think when you look at Lamar and what he brings to the table, I think, you know, he definitely has leverage as far as, you know, who he is as a quarterback for this team. The thing is, the team, on the other hand, they feel that they have their philosophy, that they know who they are as an organization, know where they rank as far as market is concerned and what they can or cannot afford. And, you know, this is the impasse. And so This is the art of the negotiation.
Coach, John Harbaugh has been the head coach of the Ravens for a while. 2008 is when he took over. So that's a lot of playoff games. And there was a lot of upsets along the way. 10 years ago today, for example, the upset in Denver against Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Beat Tennessee, beat Miami at times that they were good. This guy has had his team prepared. Gave the Patriots fits for a lot of years with Brady and Belichick. What is it about him in the postseason? What is it about the organization that you just can't quite count out Baltimore, no matter who's on the team?
The thing is, it's a mindset that starts from day one. It's not cliche talk when, you know, he talks about the team. It's not a cliched mindset when, you know, what's important now, you know, that acronym hangs big in their halls, in their facility, and down at, you know, the stadium, M&T Bank Stadium. And I think for John, it's, hey, you know, this is what we're built for. This is why we put ourselves in these positions. And he does a masterful job of getting his coaches to get the best out of the game planning and then also presenting the best game plan to be competitive. Every single time you see a Baltimore Ravens team that's on your schedule in the playoffs, you know, if you're the opposing team, yeah, you should be nervous because he does a fine job of preparing them.
What about a divisional matchup in the playoffs? What level of advantage is there? I mean, and even if it's small, what advantage? It's familiarity, but is it also how we know how you'll react to adversity? We know how you'll react to certain elements of the game late. What is it about these divisional playoff rematches that make us go, where's way to go with this one?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you do have that knowingness. So, again, when you run a play, you could run a play 585 a bunch of times against your division opponent. And then, you know, that second game, you run 585. Now, all of a sudden, that safety is hip to you. You kind of already know the nuance of the tight end, and now you take away that seam route. Well, then you go and play a non-division opponent, and you bring back 585, and now that safety, not really sure because he's only seen you on film. He really, you know, he doesn't see you on a regular, so he doesn't know that little stick nod that you do at 12 yards to get up the seam, and now that play works. And so it's that knowingness. It's that, you know, that sixth sense of understanding your opponent when it comes to the stadium itself, the travel itself, you know, all those little nuances that you use as an edge to get better or to get an advantage over your opponent, that works in your favor or it can work against you. So, you know, you do 585. Now you do 585 Z takeoff. And so now on the outside, you're running down the field scot-free because the guy bit on the comeback route because he thought he could diagnose the play. So, you know, there's a lot of chess going on, if you will, when it comes to division opponents playing each other in the playoffs.
Absolutely. That was great. Thank you. Kadri, appreciate your time. Enjoy the game this weekend. Thank you for your insight on what's going on in Baltimore.
Thank you.
You got it. Kadri Ismail, again, former Raven, former Super Bowl champion, now a pregame analyst and NFL analyst on the Ravens, who are facing the Cincinnati Bengals coming up this weekend. It was one of the 6 wild card games in the NFL. All right, that'll do it for us. We'll be back tomorrow with the Friday. And we don't get cliche and call it Football Friday, but there's nothing else we will do than break down football for you. VSiN Radio coming up next here on Sports Map Radio. Thanks, y'all, for joining us as Tony D, Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's as we kind of keep you along here on Sports Map Radio.